Or don't hit back.
Boards don't hit back. The immortal Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon. Today we're going to spend the next two episodes talking about fraud in the martial arts. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone, as usual, to my White Collar Crime and Fraud podcast. As always, I'm your host, Gene Telsk. I'd like to start off by apologizing. It's the end of July, and I like to get two episodes per month down. I'm hoping to get my second episode of this two-part episode online tomorrow. July has just been an insanely busy month. I took a vacation with my family. By the way, Portugal is awesome. If you ever have a chance to go to Portugal, I highly, highly recommend it. Portugal is an amazing place. But anyway, I went to Portugal, as I said, and with work coming back, it's just one thing after another. So I'm late in getting this podcast back on track. I'm sorry. I very much apologize. Unfortunately, I had very little time to prepare for this podcast, but as my wife reminded me, it's your podcast. You can do what you want. So I thought I'd devote this podcast to something I would have done sooner or later, but because I had little time to prepare and this is already a subject I know a great deal about, we are going to talk for the next two episodes, this one and the next one, about fraud in the martial arts. And as I said in the entrance to this podcast, there will be some profanity in this podcast. I apologize for that. I tend to use profanity very much in my real life. I don't like to use it on my podcast, but this is something I feel passionate about, and there is quite a bit of nonsense going on. So just warning for those who are listening to this podcast, and always I appreciate my listeners very much. So let's talk about fraud in the martial arts. This is really a huge topic. Of course, fraud is a huge topic, so why stop there? But talking about fraud in the martial arts, we're talking about, first of all, we need to make some definitions about what is a martial art and what we've already discussed what fraud is. So we'll discuss fraud in the martial arts, and we'll also discuss what's the big deal. But as I said, it is something I feel very passionate about. So for me, it's an easy topic of conversation. Martial arts. Everybody has heard the term martial arts. And although it's slowly changing, generally when we think of martial arts, we think of Eastern fighting disciples. That is to say, fighting arts that come from what we in America classify as, quote, Far Eastern, unquote, countries. And that would include Japan, Korea, China, Vietnam, Cambodia, countries which we, as I said, consider the Far East, which is simply through a trick of geography. But the term martial arts, interestingly enough, is a Western term. It comes from Latin, martial arts being the arts of Mars, Mars being the Roman god of war. So when we say martial arts, we're actually talking about a systematic and scientific way of fighting both with weapons and without weapons to hopefully claim victory in a fight. And there are many different types of martial arts. We'll get into that briefly here. But the term martial arts, I wanted to point out, is a Western term because although we tend to think of martial arts as coming from the Far East, pretty much every country in the world had its own martial arts. And we'll talk about that later. That's for a very simple reason, of course. Unfortunately, human history is spattered with blood, bloodshed, and warfare. And so you needed, or countries needed, its soldiers, its warriors, to know how to fight in order to survive. And human beings being what they are, we tend to systematize things as part of the way we've survived on this planet. And so it's no great surprise that we've systematized how to fight. People would systemize how to fight so they could teach it to other people and hopefully use these skills to come back alive after being in a battlefield. And of course, today there are many different types of both martial arts for health benefits, martial arts for fighting, sport fighting, what we would call police skills or combat skills for use in actual warfare, or sport martial arts, which are more generated for a sporting environment. But we're really not going to explore that too much simply because this is not a martial arts podcast. But I just want my listeners to understand that when I talk about martial arts, I'm talking about both Western, Eastern, and arts from all over the globe. As I said, until, for the most part, certainly when I was growing up, we always thought of martial arts as coming from the East. It wasn't until later that we certainly learned that Western societies had their own martial arts. Although looking back in history, it shouldn't be a great surprise to know that Westerners had their own martial arts. By Westerners, I'm referring to Europeans. African societies had their own martial arts as well. As I said, they're universal. So when we talk about martial arts, as I said, we're talking about the systematization of fighting skills, which are used by people to train how to survive in life-threatening environments due to violence. So, fraud in the martial arts. Well, obviously this means people who claim to... let's back up for a minute. Fraud in the martial arts can encompass many, many different variations. But we're going to talk about how certain individuals claim to have certain martial arts skills, but actually don't. Or at least on the surface, it would scratch that. At least it would appear that they don't have fighting skills, although they claim that they have these fighting skills. And, well, what's the danger in this? Well, if somebody's going to study martial arts, generally that means joining a school, joining a dojo for Japanese arts, a dojang for Korean martial arts, a sal for Western martial arts, what have you. And presumably, an individual's in investing their time and investing their money to learn how to fight. I mean, otherwise, why learn a martial art? You could gain just as much exercise, if not more, doing something like cycling, swimming, triathlons, marathons, weightlifting, what have you. But martial arts are skills that have to be taught. It's not something, for the most part, which is inherent. So people will invest their time and money in schools from teachers learning these skills. Well, we would take the position then, or we'd like to take the position that if we're going to spend our time and money, we're going to be learning something worthwhile. After all, if we're going to learn, say, how to defend ourselves against a stronger and bigger attacker, hopefully the skills we are learning would help us protect ourselves against a stronger and bigger attacker. If we're learning how to handle weapons, hopefully the skills we are learning will teach us how to handle weapons. If we're learning how to disarm weapons, especially if somebody has a knife or a gun, well, hopefully the skills we are learning would help us defend ourselves against a knife or a gun. But if we're learning skills that have no basis in reality or are taught by fraudulent people, by frauds or by charlatans, well, then it goes without saying, of course, what we are learning, the purpose of our learning is worthless. We're spending our time and money learning skills that have no real world or sporting value if we're into sport martial arts. And as a result, we're not getting our money's worth. We're wasting our time and our money. And of course, this is the very definition of fraud. Somebody is using diversion or some sort of skill to make us think we're learning something when we're actually not. Just like a fraudster, a fraudster will use some sort of trick to take money from us. There's really no difference. Only instead of the fraudster claiming that they have a great investment scheme when it's actually a pyramid scheme. In this case, the fraudster is claiming they have skills to teach us when they actually have no skills to teach, or they have fraudulent skills to teach us. And as a result, once again, we're wasting our time and money. I certainly would take the position that if most people knew that they were learning something which is fraudulent or had no real world skills or had no sporting skills, if you're into sports, well, then they wouldn't have taken it. So once again, fraud in martial arts is the use of deception to gain money. And so it's a very real world problem that people encounter, unfortunately, all the time, especially in America. There is no limit to the number of frauds anywhere, but in America, they seem to be, martial arts frauds seem to be quite common, if not commonplace, and certainly easy to find. Although I have a lot of friends in Europe who tell me that the same nonsense exists over there as well. So I guess, well, I don't guess. I know fraud is universal, so why should I be surprised? Anyway, let's talk for a minute about martial arts, how they came about. And once again, this is not a martial arts podcast, so we don't have time to explore every single martial art, nor is it the purpose of this. So we're going to talk a little bit about how martial arts evolved and developed and how they came about today. Well, excuse me. So, as I said, the term martial arts refers to the arts of Mars, the Roman god of war. And martial arts in general can be based on a few distinct focuses or what the martial arts focus on. For example, there's striking martial arts that focus on striking with your fist or your foot or with the whole body. We are, of course, familiar with boxing, Western boxing, one of the most popular martial arts. And by the way, boxing is a martial art. It's generally used as a sport, but boxing has martial arts applications. There's also kickboxing, Taekwondo from Korea, Karate from Japan and Okinawa, the arts known as Kung Fu or Wushu from China, mainland China, Pencaksilat from the Indonesian archipelago, Kalaripayattu from India, and also savate, which is from France, is American style kickboxing from America, that sort of thing. There's no lack of striking martial arts. And these are martial arts that focus on strikes. And then we have martial arts that focus on grappling, that is to say, closing with an opponent and throwing them to the ground, trying to get them in a hold. And of course, wrestling is by far the most well-known Western martial art. In that respect, we have freestyle wrestling, where the whole body is used, and Greco-Roman wrestling, where only the upper part of the body is used. There's jiu-jitsu, of course, originally from Japan, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which, as the name suggests, is from Brazil. Samba, which is from the former Soviet Union, Russia. Catch wrestling, which was part of Western Europe. Judo. And, of course, other arts such as Aikido, Hapkido, Sumo. There's no lack of grappling skills out there. And then, there is combat with bladed weapons. This includes Eskrima from the Philippines, Salat from Indonesia, and my personal favorite, historical fencing, historical Western martial arts, historical Western fencing, fencing systems from Italy, Germany, England, France. It arose during the Middle Ages. And it's under the broad term historical fencing, which includes not only fencing, that is to say, using the sword, but fighting with the sword, which is different from just using what we call sword fighting, but we can spend all day talking about that. Furthermore, if we go back in time, we can see even more martial arts that came certainly from the West, such as gladiator fighting from the Roman Empire. The Roman soldiers used to practice on the fields of Mars, once again, Mars, as they were trained for battle in the Roman Empire. The Greeks had their own weapon skills, certainly. This is Sparta! Anybody who's seen 300, of course, will recognize that. The Spartans were well known for their fighting skills. There was a very popular Greek unarmed combat form called pancration, which classifies as all in fighting. Today we know it as mixed martial arts. Yes, mixed martial arts actually goes back thousands of years to the pancration systems of the ancient Greeks, if not sooner. And by the way, of course, I wanted to mention mixed martial arts as martial arts, which are very popular in the world today. This includes striking and grappling with various rule subsets. And that all began with, certainly from my memory, with the Ultimate Fighting Championship in the early 90s. So there's no lack of martial arts disciples for anybody who's interested in learning martial arts. And all you have to do is look on the web today in your city, and in most large cities anyway, certainly Houston, there's dozens, if not hundreds, of martial arts schools that you can go to. Some are quite elaborate and charge very high fees. Some are literally in people's garages and basements. Well, we don't really have basements in Houston, but in people's garages, backyard sort of things. Some are study groups based on people who want to get together and try and teach themselves. Some are based on people who claim to have lineages going back to Japanese masters or Chinese masters or what have you. But there's certainly no lack of these things. And of course, these depend on what the person is looking for. There's no lack of it. For example, if a person is looking for a martial arts system, perhaps to learn calmness and meditation, there's Tai Chi, Tai Chi Quan, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. If you go to Beijing and go look at parks at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can see hundreds of people practicing Tai Chi Quan. It's a very slow, very intricate system of movements, which most scientific studies have shown to have very good health effects, such as lowering blood pressure. If you want to learn how to get into a ring and fight with somebody, well, of course, there's boxing, kickboxing, MMA. There's no lack of MMA schools, certainly here in Houston. I'm sure in most big cities you can find an MMA school no matter where you look. If you're looking to get into pure self-defense, that is to say you're just looking to try and defend yourself, Krav Maga, an Israeli fighting system, is very popular as well. So there is no lack of martial arts schools out there for anybody who is interested. And as I said, most martial arts systems have their basis in systems going back thousands of years. That's not to say, I'm not claiming, of course, that some systems have existed for thousands of years. It's kind of dubious if you ask me. But certainly it's not unreasonable to think that the same principles of modern boxing are those same principles which evolved in ancient Egypt, which did have boxing, by the way. If you look at the tombs of Beni Hassan in Egypt, you'll find scores of paintings showing boxing techniques and wrestling techniques. As I said, martial arts go back thousands of years in both Western, in all parts of the world. It's not those martial arts, those boxing systems, of course, came to ancient Greece, spread through Rome. And it's not too much of a hardship to think that modern boxing is based on these systems going back. Did they have the same fighting exact same fighting techniques? Probably not. But certainly the human body has can only do so many things. So let's say a punch that was used in ancient Egypt, perhaps maybe what we would call a uppercut, is the same kind of uppercut that would be used today in modern boxing. So there we go. So that's our little brief introduction to the world of martial arts. And interestingly enough, when I was growing up, like many Americans growing up at the same time I did, we thought of martial arts as being kind of exotic. There were, of course, TV shows like Kung Fu with the late David Carradine. He would show the scrawny Shaolin monk, half American, half Chinese Shaolin monk, wandering through the Wild West. He seemed to weigh only about 110 pounds soaking wet, yet was able to overcome all adversaries, which strains the imagination nowadays. But back then, of course, we ate it up. Not to mention the immortal 1984 classic, The Karate Kid, with Ralph Macchio and the late Pat Morita, with the elements of mysticism there. But as I said, when you get right down to it, it's martial arts are simply a systematic way of trying to learn how to fight and defend oneself, whether with weapons or without weapons. And military applications are there as well. Of course, most militaries today will spend most of their time learning armed combat, which is the way it's supposed to be. But certainly many military systems as well involve unarmed combat, certainly the basics of unarmed combat. Individual I know named Matt Larson, very, very interesting individual and the proverbial tough guy, if you ask me. He developed the entire unarmed system for the U.S. Army, which is pretty amazing. The Marine Corps has its own unarmed fighting system. I believe it's called the Marine Corps Martial Arts System. I believe that's it. And for example, Russian troops are trained in certainly in the basics of Samba, the Russian Soviet unarmed fighting system. But anyway, we can go on and on. So fraud in the martial arts, the point of this podcast. Let's say I want to learn how to defend myself, or I want to learn, you know, Houston's can be a pretty rough neighborhood. I want to learn how to defend myself in case I'm attacked. Well, what am I going to look for? Let's say I want to look for somebody who can teach me how to defend against the most common types of knife attacks, or what do I do if I'm confronted by a gun? What do I do if I'm confronted by somebody who is really trying to hurt me? And I want to look for a self-defense instructor. I'd like to look for somebody who can teach me those skills. So as I said, I'm going to invest my time and money into finding somebody who can do that. And let's say I find somebody, and I'm just throwing out numbers here. Let's say they'll charge me $150 a month, and they'll teach me skills, how to get away from an attacker, how to disarm somebody with a gun, how to disarm somebody with a knife, or what have you. And they teach me skills that actually have no real world value. And we can go on and on about this, but let's say they teach me skills that have no real world value. What am I going to do if I'm actually confronted with somebody with a gun and I try and use these skills? I'm going to get killed or wounded. That's a waste of my time, and it's fraud because they're teaching me something that will not work, even though I paid my money and invested my time into teaching me these skills. So as I said, if somebody is fraudulently exemplifying themselves as a martial arts instructor, the results can be very, very serious. Not only am I wasting my time, not only am I wasting my money, but I'm putting myself in a situation where I may think I have skills that work, but I don't. It would be similar, as you know, my occupation is that of an attorney. It would be similar to if I spent time and money learning how to make effective opening and closing arguments in a courtroom, only I find out what I'm learning is actually nonsense. And so when I make these opening arguments, I find that I've lost the jury. And during the closing arguments, I find that I've lost them even more. So I've just wasted my time and money, hurt my client, made myself look like a total fool. And of course, that could be possibly malpractice. And I would submit to you, there is such a thing as martial malpractice, somebody teaching skills they have no business teaching. So we're going to talk about in the next episode what to look for in a martial arts school, but I'd like to spend a few minutes in this episode and sometime in the next episode talking about people I believe to have been frauds in the martial arts and people who have shown that they really don't know what they're talking about. And they have built up these ideas, which some people believe, although nowadays, thanks to the internet, fortunately, a lot of them are shown to be complete fools. We're going to talk first about a person who, certainly, if you read comic books, and as I did in the 70s and 80s, you saw this guy pretty much everywhere in the back of comic books, teaching you the supposed most dangerous system known to mankind. It would make you an invincible warrior. Really crazy crap. But interestingly enough, the person I'm going to talk about actually had a background in what we would call hard style martial arts fighting. He did actually fight. You know, not just point fighting where you basically you would hit somebody to get a point, but real knock it down, drag out brawls. But still, his ideas are pretty crazy, and certainly his so-called lineage was nonsense. I'm talking about, of course, the immortal Count Dante. And once again, if you happen to collect comic books from the 70s and 80s like I do, just look around. You'll see he had this image of a fist. I don't know. You'll have to see it. It's pretty amazing. But he called himself part of the Black Dragon Fighting Society. Go figure. Actually, interestingly enough, there was a real Black Dragon Fighting Society, which was from Japan in the 1920s and 30s, which was a nationalist organization before World War II. But the real Black Dragon Fighting Society that Count Dante claimed to belong to or claimed to lead, of course, is nonsense. The individual's name, and this is going to shock people, his name was not Count Dante. His name, that real name was Jack Keenan, K-E-N-N-H-A-N. And somebody was actually trying to make a movie about this guy. I hope it came through. It'd be worth seeing. But yeah, Count Dante called himself the deadliest man alive. And that, you know, he would take all comers, and he had been in fights to the death. And interestingly enough, he actually didn't take part in what was called the Dojo Wars in Chicago in the 70s or late 60s, something like that. These Dojo Wars actually involved somebody actually getting killed. I think it was because dynamite was used. I'm not really sure, but these were actual... These actual wars were one dojo. Dojo, by the way, is a Japanese term meaning place where you people study martial arts. It literally means place of the way. But these dojos would declare war on each other and fight each other. I guess that was before the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So it was their own Ultimate Fighting Championship in its own way. Interestingly enough, Count Dante actually was a hairdresser, at least a part-time hairdresser. And apparently quite a very good one at that. And he advised his students to get into hairdressing because it was a great way to meet girls. I guess there's a point to that. But somehow the idea of this burly guy who claimed to be this ultimate fighter who knew the secrets of death techniques, you know, being a hairdresser, is something quite not right about that. It was interesting, like I said. It was an interesting time. Count Dante actually, or I should say John Keenan, actually died early. He died at the age of 36 from a bleeding ulcer. It's tragic, actually. But, this is during a time when, you know, many Americans were credulous or incredulous about martial arts in the sense they had this exotic theme to them that karate practitioners were deadly people who could kill with one blow and what have you. Now, of course, a trained fighter is a dangerous person, that goes without saying, but some of the rumors and ideas floating around about karate and other Eastern martial arts were just pretty insane at the time. It goes to say, of course, Count Dante, although he was a legitimate karate instructor, apparently, that is true, that part is true. He was certainly not this master of these death techniques. For example, One of the techniques which is used by, I don't even know it's used anymore, but certainly back then it was talked about, was a system called DIM-MAK, D-I-M-MAK, which is supposedly you would touch the human body in a certain way at a certain time and that person would die later. I mean, just a bunch of bullshit. But, I mean, this has a basis in reality, of course. If you strike the heart, the area around the heart hard enough, it can rupture the heart and the sac around the heart, the pericardial sac, and cause, you know, certainly cardiac problems. But the idea that you touch somebody on the wrist at 2:00 p.m. when the sun is high in the sky and this person's going to keel over, there's no basis for that in any kind of rational-based scientific system. But Count Dante said he could train people in this. And I was too young, so I never sent any money to Count Dante, but I can only imagine what it was like if you sent money off to Count Dante, a.k.a. John Keenan, in Chicago, Illinois, in the 1970s, and you got this book, which I've never seen. If anybody has the book and would like to send me a copy of it, not a real copy, just to take pictures of it and send it to my email address, I'd appreciate it. I'd like to see it. But the idea that, you know, this is some kind of death touch system that actually exists, well, of course, that's nonsense. And as I said, Count Dante, Mr. Keenan, actually died of a bleeding ulcer at a very young age. Very tragic. But this is the kind of fraud that was out there, certainly during that time, where Count Dante would advertise himself as being this kind of master. And as I said, it is interesting that he had actually a real fighting background. From what I understand, he actually was in the military as well. So he did have a legitimate background in certainly at least one karate system. And he probably was an instructor, a legitimate instructor of one karate system. And certainly he did engage in what we would call hard contact karate. So there is some basis to these ideas he was floating around. But this is an example of somebody who took it to the next level, or the next 100 levels, if you ask me, by putting ads in comic books for young, impressionable kids to read and say, wow, I can do this and learn how to do that. And especially when you consider that these ads appeared in comic books, and what's mainly in comic books? Superheroes. So who doesn't want, of course, to learn how to be Batman or Green Arrow or even Superman? And of course, if Count Dante can promise these things, maybe he can actually deliver. I don't know if anybody actually read Count Dante's works and thought they could go out and take on, you know, the 225-pound stevedore who likes to take on people at a bar late at night, but it'd be interesting to see if that actually happened. So Count Dante, an example of a fraudster who, you know, as I said, he did have an actual basis in fighting skills, but let's face it, it's just pure nonsense, some of these later things he was talking about. Anyway, let's move on. We're going to talk about my favorite martial arts fraud, and this is a guy named Ishida Kim. We're advancing from the 70s to the 80s, when I certainly was alive in high school. And during that time, ninjas were everywhere. Everybody wanted to be a ninja. You know, ninjutsu was like the big thing. And ninjutsu, it's one of those things which has a legitimate background in an actual Japanese system. You know, going back to the Middle Ages, but in the 80s, ninjas were thought to be these ultimate supermen who could, you know, do all these really cool things. Now, part of this was because of, interestingly enough, a TV show that was, of all things, shown in Australia in the 1960s called The Samurai, where it was one of those post-war Japanese TV productions, which was exported to Australia because it was so cheap. Australian markets would buy it. And it showed the life of a 17th century samurai who was facing a clan of ninja. And the ninja were these bad guys dressed up in black, and they used all sorts of exotic weapons like shuriken, which are basically the stars you see that you throw and disappear in a cloud of smoke, that sort of thing. And also during the late 70s as well, that was the advent of role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons. My favorite, Stormbringer, based on the Elric novels of Michael Moorcock. RuneQuest, and of course these games live on today. But there's also a role-playing game called Bushido, which was, the setting was in magical feudal Japan. And one of the characters you could play was a ninja. And of course the ninja ideas got propagated through that. But it's interesting to see about the history of ninjas. They actually were called shinobi back in the time. They were actually real spies that were used by various feudal Japanese lords, but that's a different story. But once again, they were thought of as these supermen who could do all these sorts of amazing things, and that they were using exotic weapons, not only swords, which of course are totally cool, but also those throwing stars I told you about, and using gas bombs to escape, and nets, that sort of thing. But anyway, during this time, one of the more popular authors that appeared was this guy named Ishida Kim. And I noticed we're running out of time, so we'll have to talk more about him next time. But just to show you what kind of a bullshit artist Ishida Kim was, Ishida is a Japanese name. Kim is a Korean name. So the pseudonym this guy chose for himself, and it comes as a shock, his real name is not Ishida Kim, but the pseudonym this guy chose is half Japanese, half Korean. And if you know anything about Japanese and Korean history, I can promise you these two countries they don't like each other. Let's put it that way. They have a history of enmity between the two, and it didn't help that Japan actually conquered Korea and made it not only just a territory, but a colony of Japan. Beginning in 1910, Korea was actually part of the Japanese Empire. It was forbidden to speak Korean during that time. They had to learn Japanese. And so the idea that you've got a ninja who is half Japanese, half Korean is absolutely remarkable, and it's bullshittery. I don't even know that's even a word. Anyway, we'll talk more about this in part two. Hope everybody's enjoying this episode, and we'll talk later. Bye-bye.